with a very generous sum of money, and a promise of however much more is necessary to ensure that your husband gets the fairest trial possible." Mr. Stanhope picked his way carefully through the words. "We don't take charity, Mr. Stanhope," Mum said, tight-lipped. "It's not charity," Mr. Stanhope shot back. "I was told to inform you of that in the strongest possible terms." "By who?" Mum asked. "As I said, I received a banker's cheque and a typewritten, unsigned note with certain instructions," said Mr. Stanhope. "May I see the note?" "I am afraid not. One of the conditions on it was that you shouldn't be allowed to see it."
"I see. I'm glad she did, 'cause I sure as hell didn't."
"Mrs. MacGregor, this is your husband's one and only chance to emerge from this case a free man. I would strongly advise you to take it."
"Let me get this straight," Mum said slowly. "The only reason you're still involved in this case is because someone has paid you to stay involved. Is that right?"
"Well, I wouldn't put it quite like that. And the only reason Killarney Adams is involved is because she's being paid a great deal of money. Is that right?"
"No," Mr. Stanhope said at once. "The money allowed me to approach the best, and she's it."
"The best does not come cheaply. Once she'd read your husband's file, she was more than prepared to take the case."
"And I'm meant to be grateful for that, am I?"
"If gratitude is too much to ask, then your acceptance of the situation is all that will be required," said Mr. Stanhope.
Mum turned to me. "Callum?"
It was hard to be asked for my opinion. Part of me wanted to leave it all down to Mum. Lynette was gone, Jude had disappeared, Dad was in prison, and Mum and I were left floundering on our own. I wanted Mum to turn to me and tell me that everything would be okay again. I wanted her to make all the decisions, even the wrong ones, especially the wrong ones.
"Mum, I think we should do whatever it takes to get Dad out of prison," I said at last.
"Okay, then," Mum said to the solicitor. "I'll go ahead with whatever you and Miss Adams suggest. But first of all, I'd like to speak to my husband as soon as possible." She looked from me to Mr. Stanhope. "Alone."
"I'll see what I can do," came the solicitor's reply. And all I could do was hope that Mum and I weren't making a big, big mistake. Not just for our sakes, but for Dad's as well. But for me, the most sickeningly humbling thing of all was I knew who had sent the money to Mr. Stanhope. Seffy. I had no idea how she'd done it, and I had even less idea how I was ever going to thank her, never mind repay her. But I would. I sat in Mr. Stanhope's office on his expensive brown leather chair and swore an oath before God that I would pay her back. If it took me every penny I earned for the rest of my life, I would repay her.
Chapter 63. I came home from school and got the shock of my life. Dad's suitcases were in our hallway. "Dad? Dad?"
"I'm in here, Princess."
I raced into the family room, following Dad's voice like I was tied to it. I leapt into his arms. "Dad, I've missed you."
"I've missed you too." Dad swung me around. At least he tried to. "Good grief. What have you been eating?" he exclaimed, dropping me. "You weigh a ton."
"Thanks." I giggled with pure joy. Dad was home. Dad was back. "Are you staying for good?"
"For a while, at least." Dad nodded, but not in my direction. For the first time, I saw that we weren't alone. Mother was sitting in her rocking chair, moving slowly backwards and forwards as she watched us.
What's going on?" I asked.
"Ask your father. He has all the answers," Mother replied.
I clicked then, clicked on, and died inside. Dad wasn't back for Mother. He wasn't back for any of us. Ryan MacGregor and politics were the ones who'd brought him home. Nothing else.
"You're only here until after the trial, aren't you?" I asked Dad.
The trial of the century was what the newspapers and the telly were calling it. They should call it the miracle trial of the millennium if it managed to bring Dad back home. It's all up in the air, Dad smiled, stroking my cheek. Nothing's decided. I took one look at Mother, and I knew that was a lie. At least, she believed it was a lie, which was probably the same thing.
Chapter 64. Ah, Callum, come in. I was seeing a lot of plush offices this week. First Mr. Stanhope, now Mr. Costa, our headmaster. It was only the second time I'd been in Mr. Costa's office. Crosses seemed to be big on mahogany, and his carpet was like walking on spring grass, soft and bouncy and lush. Mr. Costa sat down behind his mahogany desk and leaned back, then leaned forward, his elbows on his table as he tried to figure out which would be the most favourable position. His chair was more like a throne than otherwise, making the headmaster seem even more imposing. The sunshine shone through his crystal-clear windows behind him, making him even darker, like he was a powerful silhouette. "Sit down, please." I sat down in one of his squeaky leather chairs. "Callum, there's no easy way to say this, so I am going to get right to the point." "Yes, sir?" "Until the matter regarding your father is satisfactorily resolved..." The alarm bells now pealing in my head were deafening. "The governors and I have decided that it would serve everyone's best interests if you were suspended for a while." So that was that. I was out. "I'm guilty until my dad's proven innocent. Is that the way it works?" "Callum, I do hope you're going to be reasonable about this. Should I empty my locker now, or will the end of the day be soon enough?" "That's entirely up to you." Mr. Costa folded his arms and sat back in his chair. "You must be so thrilled," I told him bitterly. "Three down, only one more to go." "Meaning?" "Meaning Colin has gone, and you couldn't wait to get rid of Shania, and now it's my turn." "Shania was expelled for gross misconduct," Mr. Costa said haughtily. "Shania only slapped Gardner Wilson because he hit her first," I shouted at him, "and everyone knows that, including you. How come Shania gets expelled and Gardner gets away with a telling off? Why isn't it gross misconduct when a cross does it?" It was the same story up and down the country. In the few schools into which us noughts had been allowed, we were dropping like flies. Expelled, or what the authorities euphemistically called excluded. For those things which would get crosses, detention, or a severe telling off. The odd cross or two may even have got suspended once in a while, but they certainly weren't being expelled with anything like the frequency we were. "I have no intention of justifying school policy to you." Mr. Costa stood up. Our meeting was at an end. "We'll be happy to review your situation once the dust from all this clears." But the dust was never going to clear, was it? And we both knew that. "Good luck to you, Callum." Mr. Costa held out his hand. "Yeah, right." I looked at his hand with disdain. "Good luck to me, as long as it was somewhere else. The further away, the better. As far as Mr. Costa was concerned, I had already gone." I stood up and marched out of the room. I wanted to slam the door shut behind me, bringing it off its hinges. But I wasn't going to give him the satisfaction of saying, "See, I was right about him. Behaved just as I thought he would." And then I thought better of it. I turned back and slammed the door as hard as I could. I only just got my fingers out of the way in time, but it was worth it. It was a futile gesture, but it made me feel good. I strode down the corridor. Mr. Costa came thundering out of his room. "Callum, come here!" I carried on walking. "I said, come back here!" Mr. Costa called after me furiously. I smiled and carried on walking. I wasn't part of his school anymore. I didn't have to do what he said. I wasn't part of the whole cross way of life. Why should I do what any of them said? Only when I heard Mr. Costa slam back into his office did I slow down.
My throat had swollen up from the inside out. I was being gutted like a fish wriggling for its life on a slab. I was out of Heathcroft's, and I was never coming back.
The Trial, Chapter 65. I hesitated for only a moment. Steeling myself, I knocked on my sister's bedroom door.
Go away!
I walked in, darting to my left as a pillow came hurtling towards me.
Don't your ears work?
Minnie fumed. She was sitting up on her king-size bed, scowling like it was going out of fashion. I wanted to giggle, but I knew that might make her suspicious. Anyway, it would be a cider-induced giggle, not a real one. I wasn't so drunk that I didn't know that much. Minnie, I want to ask your advice about something. Oh, yes? My sister raised a skeptical eyebrow. She's very good at that. She's going to be a mother clone when she grows up. Just like me, I guess, if I didn't do something about it. What would you say if I told you that I'm thinking of going away to school? I instantly had her full attention. Where? Chivers. The boarding school. I nodded. Minnie looked me up and down till I began to feel really uncomfortable. She asked, What does Mother say about it? She said no, but... But then she would. Minnie finished for me. So what do you think? I repeated. I think it's an excellent idea, which is why I asked Mother the exact same thing a few weeks ago. Minnie smiled dryly.
You did?
I was astounded. You're not the only one who needs to get out of here. I sat down at the foot of Minnie's bed. Is it that obvious? Seffy, you and I have never got on, and I'm sorry about that. Minnie sighed. Maybe if we'd been able to count on each other, we'd have done better. Instead, we both tried to get through this on our own. What do you mean? Come off it, Persephone. You drink to escape. I become more bitchy and spiteful. We each do what we have to do. Flames shot through my body.
I don't drink,
I denied. Oh, Minnie scoffed. Well, unless you've taken to wearing cider perfume, I'd say you're into booze big time. Cider isn't alcohol, Minnie started laughing.
Not like wine or whiskey or something, I said furiously. And I just like the taste. That's the only reason. I'm not a lush.
Minnie shuffled towards me as I spoke, before she put her hand on my shoulder. Who are you trying to convince? Me or yourself? And then, I did the last thing either of us expected. I burst into tears. My sister put her arm around me then, allowing my head to rest on her shoulder, which just made me feel worse.
Minerva, I've got to get out of here. I've got to, before I explode.
Don't worry. I'm working on it with Dad.
Yeah, for yourself. But what about me?
No, I'm working on Dad for both of us, said Minnie. I keep telling him that we both need to get away from the atmosphere in this house. I pulled away from Minnie to ask, Are you getting anywhere? I think so. I'm wearing him down.
How come you didn't tackle Mother? I had to ask.
Because she cares too much, Minnie replied. Whereas Dad doesn't care at all, I said bitterly. Not true. Dad does care in his own way. Just not as much as he cares about his political career, I added. He only moved back so it'd look good for the McGregor trial, and he's meant to be back, but we hardly ever see him.
Do you want to see more of him then?
Minnie asked. I considered. Not particularly. Then be careful what you wish for, Minnie told me.
Don't worry, Seffy. Come September, you and I will both be out of this madhouse.
You're sure?
I promise.
Chapter 66. I sat up high in the packed public gallery. Far below me and to my right, I could see my father. Just the bruised left side of his face. It was only the second time I'd seen him since the police had crashed into our lives. The judge was droning on and on at the jury, telling them what the case was about and what it was not about. 12 good men and women and true, hanging on the judge's every word. 12 good cross men and women, of course. How else could justice be served? My stomach churned as the clerk of the court finally stood up and faced Dad. Ryan Callum MacGregor, on the charge of political terrorism, how do you plead? Guilty or not guilty? Dad, don't do it! I couldn't help it. Even as the words left my mouth, I knew I was doing more harm than good, but how could I just sit idly by and watch this farce of a trial? Any more outbursts from the public gallery, and I will have all members of the public evicted from this court. I hope I've made myself understood, Judge Anderson threatened. He was glaring at me, as were all the members of the jury. Mum put a restraining hand over mine. Dad looked up and our eyes met. He looked away again almost immediately, but not before the image of his battered face had burnt its way into my mind. His split lip and his bruised cheek and his black eye. But there was no condemnation on his face, just a sweeping, intense sadness. The clerk repeated his question. On the charge of political terrorism, how do you plead? Guilty or not guilty? Silence. Silence that went on and on and on. The defendant will please answer the question, Judge Anderson said brusquely. Dad glanced up at Mum and me again. Not guilty, he said at last. A collective gasp broke out from every corner of the courtroom. Mum squeezed my hand. Whispers and inaudible comments flew around the room. Dad's lawyer turned round and smiled briefly at us. She was careful to wipe all trace of her smile off her face before she turned back to the judge. You are charged by means of the aforementioned state crime of political terrorism with the murder of Aisha Pilling, the clerk continued. How do you plead? Guilty or not guilty? Dad's reply was stronger this time. Not guilty. And that was his reply to each of the separate charges read out to him. By the time the clerk had read the seventh murder charge, he had to shout to make himself heard. So did Dad. Not guilty! The courtroom erupted. The judge had everyone in the public gallery thrown out of the court, but I didn't care. It was one of the happiest moments of my life. Not guilty. You tell them, Dad.
Chapter 67. I got the shock of my life. I received a subpoena saying I had to be in court on the following Monday. The subpoena was sent via mother as I was underage, making her directly responsible for making sure that I turned up on the right day at the right time. Why do they want me there? I said, horrified, as I stared down at a whole load of legal jargon that I didn't really understand. That's what comes from hanging around noughts, Minnie told me maliciously. I was about to tell her where to go when, to my surprise, Mother jumped in before me. Minerva, if you kept quiet, you'd at least give the illusion that there's more in your head than just air, Mother snapped. Minnie flounced out at that, and good riddance. I turned to smile at Mother, but her expression wasn't much better than Minnie's. This is exactly why I've always warned you to stay away from that boy and his whole family, Mother told me. Now our names are going to be dragged into court and through the mud, and the newspapers are going to be ecstatic. Your father isn't going to like this one little bit. It's hardly my fault, I tried to defend myself. Then whose fault is it? Mother snapped. Seffi, it's time you learned that if you lie down with dogs, you're bound to get fleas. And she left the room, leaving me to stare after her.
Chapter 68. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? I looked down at the good book under my hand. It was cool, almost cold beneath my fingers. The truth. Which version of the truth would this cross court find acceptable? I do, I replied. Although I spoke quietly, my voice rang out through the courtroom. They'd obviously turned my microphone up to maximum. They didn't want to miss a word, and I didn't want to say a word.
afraid that one stray syllable would be the death of my dad. I looked around. The judge sat behind a raised platform. The witness box where I stood was next to the judge's platform, from where we could both look out over the rest of the court. The prosecution lawyer, a hard-faced man called Sean Pingle, QC, sat glaring at me. Kalani Adams looked straight ahead, barely blinking. She looked like she was in a world of her own. Mind you, this was her world. It sure wasn't mine. "You may be seated," Judge Anderson told me. "No," I said, adding as an afterthought. "Thank you. I'd rather stand." The judge turned away with just the slightest raising of one shoulder. Sean Pingle stood up. I held my breath. "Could you state your full name for the record, please?" Nothing to catch me out there. Or was there? Think. Keep your answers short, Callum. "Callum Ryan McGregor. Do you belong to the Liberation Militia?" Kalani Adams jumped to her feet. "I object, Your Honour. Callum McGregor is not on trial here." "It goes to witness credibility, Your Honour," Pingle argued. "I'll allow it," the judge replied. Pingle repeated his question. "Do you belong to the Liberation Militia?" "No, I don't," I replied before the last word had died away. "So you don't?" "That's right, I don't." "Are you sure about that?" "Your Honour," Kalani was on her feet again. "Move on, Mr. Pingle," Judge Anderson directed. I stole a glance at the jury. Pingle had set me up and no mistake. By asking me the same question over and over, he'd made out without saying explicitly that I was lying. I could see the suspicion in the faces of the jury already, and I'd only be asked one question. Admittedly, three different ways, but only one question. "Does your father belong to the Liberation Militia?" I glanced across to where Dad sat. He was looking straight ahead, somewhere years ahead or years behind. "No, he doesn't," I replied. Had I waited too long to answer? Had the jury been aware of the slight pause before I spoke? I glanced at them again. Two of them were writing something down in their notepads. "How can you be sure?" "Because my father wouldn't hurt a fly." "Whereas the Liberation Militia would?" Pingle asked dryly. "Objection, Your Honour. Sustained." "My dad doesn't belong to the LM," I repeated. "Callum, what's your opinion of the LM?" "Your Honour, objection. Overruled." The judge didn't even look at Dad's lawyer this time. His eyes were on me. My opinion of the LM. What should I say to that? I looked around. The noughts in the public gallery waited for me to answer. So did Dad's lawyer. So did the jury. So did Dad. Any organisation which promotes equality between noughts and crosses is... My mind went blank. I was starting to panic inside. What should I do now? "Noughts and crosses should be equal," I tried again. "I support anyone who tries to bring that about."
"I see. And the end justifies the means, does it?"
Kalani jumped to her feet again. A yo-yo had nothing on her.
"Your Honour, withdrawn," Pingle said with an airy wave of his hand.
I glanced at the jury. The statement may have been withdrawn, but it had done its work.
"Did your father ever mention belonging to or joining the LM?"
"No."
"Did your brother, Jude, ever mention belonging to or joining the LM?
"No."
"So, no one in your family had anything to do with the planting of the bomb at the Dundale Shopping Centre?"
"That's right."
"And you're sure that no one in your family knew anything about it?"
"That's correct."
"How many more times? Including you?"
"Including me,"
I agreed, trying to keep the annoyance out of my voice. My sweaty palms told me that I was being led into a trap, but I had no idea what it was. My shirt was beginning to stick to my sweaty body. I wanted to wipe my forehead, but I thought that would make it look too much like I was lying, so I clenched my fists to keep them by my sides. "Your Honour, my learned colleague has been asking the same question for the last 10 minutes, Killarney snapped. "If he has a point, perhaps he could be instructed to get to it sometime soon." "I have every intention of doing just that." The prosecutor's smile was oily, to say the least. "Your Honour, I call into evidence Exhibit D-19. What on earth was D-19? I watched as a TV with a massive screen and a VCR were wheeled into the court. As two men set up the equipment opposite the jury, I risked a glance at my dad. He was watching me, and the moment I caught his eye, he almost imperceptibly shook his head. At first, I wondered if I'd imagined it, but he continued to look at me, his eyes burning into mine, and I knew I hadn't. I turned to Pingu, wondering what he was up to, and I swear he smirked back at me. One of the court clerks handed him a remote control handset. He turned to the TV. I did the same. If my heart was thumping before, it was dive-bombing now. The screen flickered to life. I don't know what I'd been expecting, but the Dundale Shopping Centre wasn't it. The video had obviously been made from one of those closed-circuit TV cameras that were dotted all over the centre. And with a gasp of pure horror, it suddenly hit me what was coming. "Your Honour, this tape has been put together by the police, my office, and two independent witnesses from prominent Nort groups, to ensure that what we see today is exactly what was taped on the day of the infamous bombing," Pingu'll explained. "Your Honour, I strenuously object," Killarney began furiously. "I haven't had a chance to preview these tapes, and..."
"I only acquired them yesterday evening, and I and my colleagues have been working through the night to assemble this footage." Pingu'll didn't get very far.
"Your Honour, I must insist on being allowed to view the tapes first before they are entered into evidence so that I have a chance to prepare my defence."
"Your Honour, there are precedents to presenting evidence in court not yet seen by the defence. If I can quote..."
"No, you may not," Judge Anderson interrupted.
"I am well aware of the precedents, Mr. Pingu. You're not the only one who went to law school. My apologies."
"Your Honour," Killarney tried to bring the judge back to the subject in hand.
"No, Miss Adams, I'll allow it," said Judge Anderson. "I will, however, allow the court a recess after this witness has been questioned to give you time to prepare your response."
As Killarney sat down, she gave the judge a look that was pure ice. He didn't miss it either. I saw from the slight tightening of his lips that he was less than pleased. I glared at Killarney. How would antagonizing the judge help my father's case?
"Now then, Callum, please could you identify the person running out of Allen and Shepherd's fine goods store?" asked the prosecutor.
I stared at the screen, then blinked and swallowed hard. There was no mistake. It's me," I whispered.
"Could you speak up, please?" Pingu said.
"It's me!" I didn't mean to shout, but that's how it came out.
"Can you tell me what you were doing in the Dundale at this time, approximately 10 minutes before the bomb went off?"
"I can't remember."
"Let's see if I can refresh your memory," said Pingu.
He pointed the remote at the TV and pressed the fast-forward button. The time code at the bottom of the video leapt ahead 7 minutes before he stopped the tape.
"Is this still you entering the Cuckoo's Egg Cafe?"
I nodded.
"We need a verbal response for the court audio tape," the judge told me.
"Yes," I said. Pingu let the tape play. A few moments later, I could be seen leaving the cafe and pulling Seffi behind me. Although you couldn't hear what was being said, it was obvious that all I wanted to do was get her out of there.
The alarm at the shopping centre must have gone off then because Seffi started looking around, puzzled. I pulled her towards the nearest exit and then we both started running. Once we were out of the exit, Pingle fast-forwarded for a couple of minutes and, without warning, there was a white flash from the cafe and the tape went dark. The silence was damning.
Do you still insist that neither you nor any member of your family knew anything about the Dundale bomb?
Pingul asked scathingly.
Yes, I see. In this film, who are you pulling from the Cuckoo's Egg Cafe?
Seffi.
Persephone Hadley? Kamal Hadley's daughter?
Yes.
What's your relationship with Persephone Hadley?
She's a friend. Someone up in the public gallery started to whisper at that.
Could you tell this court why you were in such a hurry to get Persephone out of there?
I said I'd meet her and I was late.
Really? Pingle raised a sceptical eyebrow. When you found her, why didn't you sit down in the cafe with her or go for a stroll around the shops? What was the hurry?
I was late and I was afraid her mum would appear at any second and I wanted to show her something.
What? Pingul prompted.
I can't remember. More murmurs from the public gallery. With everything that's happened, I can't remember. It was something silly, a car or a plane or something.
Indeed.
Yes, I was sweating so much I was going to have to swim away from the witness box.
No further questions, Pingul said, his voice ringing with contempt before he sat down.
I hung my head.
Forgive me, Dad.
I couldn't even look at him. I started to walk down the steps of the witness box.
Just a moment, Callum.
Killarney's voice brought me back to the present. I looked up. She waved me back into the witness box. I did as directed.
Could you describe your relationship with Mrs. Hadley, Persephone Hadley's mother?
Killarney asked gently.
Mrs. Hadley doesn't like me much.
Why do you say that?
She told her secretary not to let me into her house.
I see. Do you know why?
I coughed nervously. Persephone, was beaten up at school. Mrs. Hadley blamed me.
Why? Did you do it?
No, of course not, I said appalled. Some girls from the year above her did it.
Pingle rose to his feet. Your Honour, I fail to see the relevance of this line of questioning.
Miss Adams, Judge Anderson prompted. I'll come directly to the point, Your Honour, Killarney smiled.
Callum, what would you have done if Persephone had been in the cafe with her mother?
How should I answer that? Think, think.
I would have waited until Seffi was alone before trying to speak to her.
But that might have taken a while.
I faked a nonchalant shrug.
I wanted to show Seffi what was outside, but it wouldn't have been the end of the world if I hadn't. I would have waited until she was alone. I wasn't in a hurry.
Thank you, Callum.
Killarney smiled at me. That will be all.
Chapter 69. Miss Hadley, could you tell us what happened when you were in the Cuckoo's Egg Cafe on the day of the bombing?
Mr. Pingle, the prosecutor, smiled at me encouragingly, which helped a little. A very little. I hadn't expected to be quite so nervous. I didn't want to be here. The courtroom was too warm and too big. They should have just painted huge eyes all over the floor and the walls and the ceiling and had done with it. And even that would have been far less intimidating than the judge, the lawyers, and the jury.
Take your time, Miss Hadley.
The judge smiled. I smiled back at him gratefully.
Maybe I could do this. Maybe it wouldn't be so bad after all. I was having a drink in the cafe. My mother had gone back to our car to put away our shopping.
Go on, Mr. Pingle prompted gently.
Well, Callum came in and said we should leave.
Why?
I swallowed hard. I'd sworn on the good book not to lie, but the judge and the jury wouldn't understand the truth. The truth was more than just a spoken sentence. It was a combination of the thoughts and feelings and the history behind them. Was I making excuses? Dressing them up in reasons and justifications and deliberate evasions? 7 people died. No reasoning in the world would ever change that fact, or excuse it.
Miss Hadley, did Callum give you a reason why you should leave the cafe?
He wanted to show me something outside. I assumed he wanted to show me something outside. I mean, did I assume it? I must have done, until the bomb went off.
What?
Pardon?
What did he want to show you?
Mr. Pingle's smile was wearing a little thin. I don't know. I can't remember. I don't think he said.
Come now, Miss Hadley.
He didn't say, I insisted. It was going to be a surprise, but the bomb went off before he could tell me.
And that's the truth?
Yes, the truth, but not the whole truth and nothing but. I remembered a saying of my mother's, a wise person tells what she knows, but not all she knows. Did that apply in a court of law? Somehow I didn't think so. I watched as Mr. Pingle regarded me, a strange look on his face. At last, he spoke.
Miss Hadley, Callum's your friend, isn't he?
I nodded. Yes.
And you wouldn't want anything or anyone to hurt him and his family, would you?
No.
Do you understand that the only way you will hurt him today is if you don't tell the truth?
I know that, I replied.
Good. So I'll ask you again.
An edge was beginning to creep into Mr. Pingle's voice now.
Why did Callum want you to leave the Dundale shopping centre so urgently?
He wanted to show me something outside. My voice was stronger now.
I see. Tell me something, Miss Hadley. How would you describe Callum McGregor?
Objection, Your Honour. What does Miss Hadley's opinion of her friend Callum have to do with my client Ryan McGregor?
Asked Killarney.
I'm wondering that myself, Miss Adams. Judge Anderson nodded. Objection sustained. What is your relationship with Callum McGregor?
We're friends. Good friends.
Perhaps more than good friends.
He's my friend, that's all. Your Honour! Killarney got no further.
Very well, then.
Mr. Pingle was well and truly annoyed now.
Miss Hadley, do you know who is responsible for the bomb at the Dundale shopping centre? Yes or no?
Of course not. How could I? I said, shocked that he'd even asked me.
Indeed. No further questions.
Mr. Pingle sat down. I didn't know who planted that bomb. I didn't want to know. And that, more than anything else I'd said or even thought so far in court, was the truth.
Chapter 70. Now that my evidence was out of the way, I was allowed to watch from the public gallery. I didn't sit with Mum, even though she wanted me to. But how could I? Between the two of us, Seffi and I had pretty much put the noose around Dad's neck. But then Killarney Adams showed why she was a red-hot lawyer. A man called Leo Stoll was called to the stand. I didn't recognise his name or his face when he entered the witness box. He was a middle-aged cross who was obviously not short of a penny or two. I glanced across at Mum. She had a puzzled, quizzical look on her face. I shrugged. It was no good asking me who he was. I didn't have a clue. I watched as Leo Stoll was sworn in, then waited with bated breath to see what he had to do with my father. Killarney Adams stood up and faced the witness.
Mr. Stoll, could you tell the court what you do for a living?
I'm a police officer, and now retired.
His voice was deep and melodious, like a baritone singer or something.
"You don't look old enough to retire," I could hear the smile in Killarney's voice, although I couldn't see her face as she had her back to the public gallery.
"I was retired through ill health," Mr. Stoll replied.
"Oh?"
"I was knocked over by a Nort joyrider, and my hip was completely pulverised. I was offered a desk job, but after years spent out in the field," Mr. Stoll shrugged, "well, I just couldn't face it, so I took early retirement instead."
"Do you recognise the defendant, Ryan McGregor?"
"Nope, never seen him before in my life," Mr. Stoll said firmly.
Mr. Pingle glanced at Killarney. I reckon she had one more question before he jumped to his feet, bleating to the judge about the relevance of her questions.
"Mr. Stoll, have you ever seen Callum McGregor before?"
"Who?"
My heart plunged down to my feet. Why was she asking him about me? Was that her strategy, to get Dad off by hanging me out to dry?
"Callum McGregor, could you stand up, please?"
I hung on to the safety rail and pulled myself upwards. I was burning under the gaze of every eye in the court. This was just as bad as standing in the witness box.
"Oh, yes. I've seen him before," Mr. Stoll said, with no hint of hesitation in his voice.
"Where?" Killarney asked.
"On the afternoon that the Dumdale bomb went off," Mr. Stoll replied. "I was having a cup of coffee in the Cuckoo's Egg Cafe. That boy came in and started to drag out a girl who'd been sitting down minding her own business. As she was being dragged out, I asked if she was okay. I may have a dodgy hip, but I still know a move or two."
"Quite. So what happened then?" Killarney prompted.
"The girl said that the boy was a friend of hers and that he was just taking her out to show her something," said Mr. Stoll.
"You're sure that's what she said?" Killarney asked eagerly.
"Positive. Like I said, I used to be a police officer, so I've been trained to observe and remember."
Did Seffy say that? I couldn't even remember. I just remember my desperation to get her out of the Dundale before the whole place was blown to smithereens.
"Did the girl seem particularly scared or worried in any way?" Killarney asked.
"Not at all. She was treating the whole thing like it was a big joke."
"And how come you survived the bomb blast?"
"I finished my coffee and left less than a minute after the boy up there and his friend."
"Thank you, Mr. Stoll. No more questions."
Killarney Adams sat down.
Spontaneous cheers erupted throughout the courtroom. Judge Anderson tried to restore order, but it wasn't going to happen. In the end, he had to clear the court. But just like that, my story had been corroborated. And by a cross police officer of all people. If it had been funny, I would have busted a gut laughing.
Chapter 71. Every evening, I sat glued to the early evening news for any information about Callum's dad's trial. I'd rack my brains to try and come up with some way of helping him, but I'd drawn a complete and utter blank. What could I do? What could just one person do? So I sat and watched, like the rest of the country, whilst a reporter told us in great detail what had happened that day in court. They occasionally showed Callum and his mum hiding their faces from the cameras as they came out of the court. The night they showed Callum's house burnt to the ground, I went to my bedroom and cried and cried. Luckily, Callum and his mum were staying with relatives, but it still hurt to think of what my friend was going through. I wanted to phone, but I didn't have Callum's new number. I wanted to visit him, but I didn't have his new address. I still went down to the beach once in a while, but Callum was never there. I pretended to myself that we just kept missing each other. I'd arrive at 5, he'd arrive at 6. I'd arrive at 6, he'd arrive at 7. But deep down, I knew that he'd stopped coming. He had more important things on his mind. I don't know how Callum's mum managed to get Killarney Adams to defend Callum's dad, but I was so glad she had. Even before I'd had to go into the courtroom, I'd heard of Killarney Adams QC, and I wasn't really into politics or current affairs or anything like that. According to the reporters on the telly, Killarney was making sure that the trial was as fair as possible, and putting the judges back up in the process. Good for her.
Ryan McGregor just had to be found not guilty. It was only right and proper. It was only just. It was only justice.
Chapter 72. Dear Seffy, this is a very hard letter for me to write. I keep putting it off and putting it off, and this is about the 10th draft. I scrunched up the paper and threw it in the already overflowing bin. Start again. Dear Seffy, I'm just going to come right out and say this. I don't know how you managed to get all that money together to help my dad, but I love you for it. Our lawyer, Kalani Adams, is really on our side, to the extent that the judge has threatened twice to hold her in contempt of court. I don't know how, but someday, somehow, I'll make it up to you. I just want you to know that I'll be forever... Another sheet of paper scrunched up and thrown in the bin. I folded my arms on the table and rested my head on them. Good or bad, every aspect of my life lay in the hands of others. Kalani Adams, the jury, my so-called education at Heathcroft, even with Seffy. Maybe this was it. Maybe this was all there was or ever would be to my life. I was so sick and tired of being this helpless. Over the last few months, I'd had a recurring nightmare about being in a cardboard box no bigger than I was. A normal, simple cardboard box. But no matter how hard I pushed or punched, I just couldn't smash my way out. In fact, the more I tried, the harder it became. And in my bad dreams, it was only when my hands were bloody and I was gasping frantically for breath that I realised I wasn't in a box at all. It was a coffin. And once I realised that, I stopped struggling and just waited to die. That's what terrified me the most. I stopped struggling and waited to die.
Chapter 73. At last, the trial was over. The jury was out, considering its verdict. I was actually flicking from TV station to TV station, trying to find any news item that would bring me more up to date. I'd seen the so-called evidence weighed up by numerous experts on any number of news programs, as well as in the papers. And they all thought Callum's dad was guilty. No one ever came right out and said so. There was a lot of useless talk about the balance of probabilities and the pros and cons of the case and discussions on the evidence. Funny, but I've never been the slightest bit interested in the news before. Now suddenly I couldn't stop watching it. When Minnie started moaning in my ear about watching something else, I went up to my room to watch it in peace and private. Ryan McGregor wasn't guilty. So why did I feel like I was the only person in the world, the only cross in the world, to believe that?
Chapter 74. Mum and I held hands as we waited for the foreman to speak. Hope and hopelessness churned in my stomach like oil and water.
Foreman of the jury, have you reached a verdict upon which you are all agreed?
We have, Your Honour.
Do you find the defendant, Ryan Callum McGregor, guilty or not guilty of the crime of political terrorism?
Why was he taking so long to speak?
Answer the question. What's your answer?
He opened his mouth and said something, but I didn't hear. Why couldn't I hear? I shook my head and leaned forward, concentrating hard. Had he spoken? I'm sure he'd said something. I saw his mouth open and close. I licked my dry lips, feeling sick. I looked at Mum. Her expression was carved in granite. Next to Mum, a blonde woman buried her face in her hands. The man next to her shook his head in disbelief.
Why couldn't I hear anything?
Maybe because I didn't want to hear.
Do you find the defendant, Ryan Callum McGregor, guilty or not guilty of the murder of Aisha Pilling?
The clerk's voice rang out like a gunshot. and I heard the verdict that time. God help me. I heard it.
The Way It Is. Chapter 75. I sat on our garden swing, twisting it this way and that. I didn't actually swing anymore. That was kid stuff. I just twisted. It was hot. Too hot. Seffy, what are you doing? Mother yelled across our garden at me. Uh-oh, trouble. I'd come home and gone straight out into the garden when I knew Mother did her nut if she saw me messing about in my school uniform. Come here, please, Mother hollered. I was going to shout why, but I thought better of it. For the last couple of weeks, Mother had got worse, and now I just did as I was told and kept my head down as far as she was concerned, and for the most part, it worked. Jumping off the swing, I ran to the house. Go to your room and put on your navy blue dress and your blue shoes. Which blue dress? I frowned. Your Jackson spacey one, Mother told me as if it was obvious. My eyebrows went up at that. That dress had cost over £1,000, and Mother told me I was not to wear it without her express permission. The last time I'd worn it was when I'd snuck out of the house to Callum's after Lynette had died. I and my dress had gone down like a lead balloon then. It kind of made me loath to put the thing on again. It wasn't a special Saturday, and it wasn't anyone's birthday. Or had I forgotten someone? No. Today was 24th July, and the next birthday was my sister's, and that wasn't until the middle of August. Why do I have to get dressed up? Because I said so. Mother snapped. Do as you're told, and tell your sister to hurry up as well. Where are we going? No more questions, Mother said edgily. Go. I headed for the kitchen door, turning in the doorway to ask Mum what was going on. She was pouring out a glass of Chardonnay, which she downed in a wunner. She poured out another one. I left the room and headed upstairs. Minnie didn't know what was going on either, not that she would have volunteered to tell me if she had. Apart from the one time we'd confided in each other in Minnie's bedroom, my sister and I have never had much to say to each other. But I knew it was something very serious indeed when Mother opened our front door and Dad's official government Mercedes was parked on the driveway. And Dad was in the back. My face lit up like a Christmas tree at the sight of him. Dad! I ran over to the car and threw open the door before Carl had the chance to do it for me. I hadn't seen him in over a week. Seffy, get in this car and try to show that you've been brought up, not dragged up, Dad ordered, his face as stiff as a door. It couldn't have hurt more if he'd slapped me across the face. 1 week apart, and that was all he had to say to me. Mother and my sister Minerva had reached us by this time. Carl held the door open for them. I hung back, waiting for them to get in first before I did. No way was I going to sit next to Dad. No way was I even going to say a word to him until he apologized. Mother sat next to him, very careful not to actually touch him. Next Minnie, then me. Less than a minute later, we were off, and I still had no idea where. I glanced down at my watch. 4:30. I looked at Mother and Dad and Minnie, hoping that someone would let me know what was going on without my having to ask. Nothing doing. I turned and looked out of the window. If everyone else wanted to be mysterious, then let them get on with it. I wasn't going to join in. Our car drew up outside Humet Prison. 5:50. There were cars ahead of us and cars behind, and people walking in on foot. All the noughts walking through the pedestrian entrance were dressed in black, and not one of them spoke. Every expression was a reflection of the one before it and the one after. When we reached the entrance of the prison, Dad flashed his ID card at the two security guards by the gates. We were waved straight through. What on earth were we doing in Humet Prison? Why did I have to put on my Jackson Spacey dress, no less, to go to a prison? We were taken out into the prison courtyard. The early evening air was humid and uncomfortable. Our car was air-conditioned, so I hadn't realized how unpleasant it had become outside. Already my dress was beginning to stick to me.
Half of the prison courtyard was taken up by seats placed in tiers, while most of the rest of the space was bare. At the far end of the courtyard was a scaffold, and still I didn't click. We were shown to our places right at the front of the seated area. I looked around, puzzled. All the noughts were standing. Some were looking at the scaffold. A few were crying. Some were looking at us crosses on the seats, burning hatred on their faces. Without warning, my eyes caught and locked with Callum's. Shock, like a bucket of ice water, flowed over me. What was going on? He stared at me. I hadn't seen him for so long that the jolt was all the greater for seeing him here.
Ladies and gentlemen and noughts, we are here today to witness the execution of Ryan Callum MacGregor of 15 Hugo Yard, Meadowview, having been found guilty of 7 counts of murder and the charge of political terrorism. His appeal having been denied, the sentence of hanging by the neck until he is dead will now be carried out. Bring out the prisoner.
And only then, when it had been spelt out for me, did I finally realise what I was doing there. They were going to hang Callum's dad. I turned to the scaffold, appalled. A door opened to the left of the scaffold, and Callum's dad was led out. I turned to Mother and Dad. They were looking straight at the scaffold, their expressions grim, sombre. I tried Minnie. Her head was slightly bowed, but she kept stealing glances at the scaffold, and still no one spoke. We might have been in a graveyard. We were in a graveyard. I turned to Callum. He was watching me with a look on his face I'd never seen before. A look that cut right through me like the sharpest, keenest scalpel. I shook my head slowly. I didn't know, I mouthed. I looked from the scaffold back to Callum, from Callum's dad to Callum, from my parents to Callum, from the crowds all around and back to Callum. I swear I didn't know how to make my desperate thoughts reach him. I wouldn't have come if I'd known where we were going. Wild horses couldn't have dragged me through those gates. That's the truth. Callum, you must believe that. Mother, I want to leave, I whispered furiously.
Not now, Seffy.
Mother looked straight ahead. I want to leave. Now! I jumped to my feet, raising my voice. Heads were turning in our direction, but I didn't care.
Sit down, Persephone, and stop making an exhibition of yourself, Mother snapped.
Nothing is going to make me sit here and watch this. I'm leaving. I turned on my heels, trying to push past the other dignitaries in my row. Mother stood up, spun me around, and slapped my face.
Now sit down and don't say another word.
Cheek smarting, eyes stinging, I sat down. Some eyes were watching me. I didn't care about that. More eyes were watching the scaffold. Well, maybe I couldn't leave, but they couldn't force me to watch. They couldn't force me to raise my head, and if they did, they couldn't force me to open my eyes, and if they did, they couldn't force me to see. But I couldn't keep my gaze lowered. Slowly, I raised my head, my eyes drawn to the sight, my heart disgusted by it. Angry with myself, I turned away, only to find myself looking straight at Callum. He wasn't watching his dad either. He was looking at me, and wishing me and every other cross as dead could be. I'd seen that look on others' faces, noughts looking at crosses, crosses looking at noughts, but I'd never seen it on Callum's face before. And I knew in that moment that now I'd never ever stop seeing it. Flinching, I turned back to the scaffold. A choice of views, hatred or hatred. They were putting a black hood over Callum's dad's head now. The prison clock began to strike the hour. When it struck 6, it would all be over. 1. All eyes on the scaffold. 2. The noose around Callum's dad's neck. 3. Someone begins to weep. Loud, heart-wrenching sobs. 4. A man at the scaffold nods to someone behind him.
Long live the Liberation Militia!
Callum's dad shouts at the top of his voice. Five.
Chapter 76. The clock struck five.